Hello, everyone, and welcome again to another episode of Resilient Health Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Darren Ingles. And if you've been following me for a bit, you know how important gut health is. We talk about it all the time. I mean, the gut's really kind of the cornerstone of health, and it comprises, you know, up to 80% of your immune function. It's important for digestion and absorption, and it controls weight and metabolism and does so many good things for the body. So joining me on the podcast today is Stephen Wright. Stephen is one of the co-founders of healthygut.com. And today we're going to talk all about gut health. So Stephen, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited for this.
So, you know, I know you've had your own health journey, and I think it's always great for people to understand, you know, where you're coming from and everything that you do. Can you just share a little bit about, you know, how you came to do what you do today?
Sure. Yeah. So I come from a family history of IBS. I didn't know that farting at the dinner table was like weird until I got to college. I actually had issues from birth that led to a number of IBS related things. You know, fast forward into college, lots of stress, lots of beer, lots of pizza, and things became really bad, such that, you know, I was nicknamed the gas man, and I had a lot of embarrassing stories and accidents of both constipation and diarrhea, but a lot of bloating as well. And I thought that I could just, you know, maybe change my diet after college, not be so stressed. I could go back to eating like salad and chicken and different things like that. And it didn't work. And so I was actually called into my boss's office and was labeled the smelly guy at work because I was stinking up the office, and basically told that if I wanted to keep my job, that I would need to get this figured out. So that finally, I mean, I am stubborn. I'm very stubborn. And so that drove me finally into, you know, Western doctor's offices at the time in Chicago. This was 2008, 2009. And to their credit, they did do some tests. They checked me for celiac disease, and I don't have the genes for it. But nobody knew about gluten sensitivity. Nobody knew about lots of the things we know about now. And right, they just said, suck it up, kid. You have a family history of IBS. You can have any antibiotic you want. You can have all the Metamucil you want, and just eat whole grains. And so that didn't help much. In fact, I missed a date like a few weeks later, and I was just crying on the toilet all night. And that was kind of my breaking point, where I was open to really any ideas. And I had a friend at the time, Jordan, who ended up being my co-founder in our first company together, who was like, hey, man, gluten-free diet didn't work for me either. I had to do this other type of restricted dieting called the specific carbohydrate diet, where you make all of your own food and you eliminate all these different ingredients. Why are you waiting? Just get going. And so that was the kick that got me to learn to cook and learn to make my own meals. And sure enough, 50% of my bloating was gone in the first week. And so that hooked me. That now I had all this rage and anger and empowerment that, hey, there's a lot of control that I could take back here. And if I could just reverse engineer, my college training was electrical engineering. If I could just find other people like me and reverse engineer what they did, then I could figure this out. Like, I don't have to sacrifice my whole life having all these bloating, embarrassing experiences. And so that led to functional medicine and all kinds of lab tests. And I went to the Kalish Institute and I got certified in it for a while, had a clinic for a while. And then it's kind of led to this latest evolution of work, which is trying to create products that I wish I had back in the day.
Oh, that's such a great, inspiring story. And it's funny, I remember seeing, I swear it was an ad, I think it was on Facebook with Jordan, you know, years ago. And thinking, oh, this poor guy, you know, he showed the pictures kind of before and after and really kind of emaciated. And I think he does have celiac, if I recall.
Yeah.
And, you know, that just one of many types of gastrointestinal problems that can lead to, you know, malabsorption, malnutrition. And it's great that you both found each other and were able to create this company now that I know has been helping so many people. And I want to talk about a couple of specific products today, because I know my own patient population, you know, these things can be incredibly helpful. And the first thing I want to talk about is butyrate. you know, the large, for people who don't know, just as a primer, you know, your digestion really starts in your mouth with saliva that starts breaking down some of your food substances. And then they go to the stomach. Stomach makes hydrochloric acid, which primarily breaks down protein. Then all your food goes into the small intestine. And that's where your pancreas releases all the enzymes to finish breaking down protein and carbohydrate and fat. And then that food moves along and gets absorbed throughout the distance of 12 to 15 feet of your small intestine. And then it gets to the large intestine, and that's where most of your gut bugs live, and that's where we see a lot of problems like ulcerative colitis and to some degree like Crohn's disease. So the large intestine, this is where butyrate really plays a key role. So can you just share a little bit about, you know, what is butyrate?
Yeah, well, you set the table perfect there. Most people don't even realize that their microbiome is really at the top of the large intestine there, and it's not in the colon near the end of the chain, near the toilet. And it's not at the beginning of the chain. It's somewhere in the middle. And it really is, at some point, I think they're going to call it an organ. I really do. Yeah. And the microbiome does so many things, but one of the key things that it does is it finishes that digestion of foodstuffs, like all the things that we didn't absorb throughout the process. And the majority of the stuff that's left over are the fermentable fibers, these types of carbohydrates usually, or think of the vegetable matter and the fruit matter, things like that. And the bugs begin a sort of a hippie community, in my opinion. It's like this handoff, right? They do one job, they hand it off to the next species, and they do a job and they hand it off to the next species. And after a few of these species get their turn at it, there's a group of bugs that make short chain fatty acids. And these short chain fatty acids, butyrate is the most common as well as the most talked about. It has the most anti-inflammatory properties as well as some other really cool properties to it. And so it's becoming this rising star of gut health now that we've kind of realized that maybe probiotics have potential, but they weren't the panacea that we all hoped they would be. And so right now we're starting to look at if the probiotics weren't the answer, what would happen to the things that the probiotics make? And so butyrate is the end process of what a lot of the microbiome makes. And it's this short chain fatty acid that when I've gone through the research, I end up thinking of it like magnesium for your gut. Like it's involved everywhere, almost every single process. And then somewhere between 10 to 15% of it goes systemic, and you can find connections to neurodegenerative diseases, to osteoporosis, to almost like everywhere you look, there's a butyrate receptor and there's systemic butyrate that's doing some sort of signaling or modulation of processes. And so what happens in the gut is that butyrate is the preferred fuel source for the colonic cells, for the large intestine cells. They prefer butyrate metabolism, not glucose metabolism. So the microbiome basically makes the fuel for the preferred metabolism in the large intestine. And when it does that, it sucks oxygen out of the large intestine, because that's the metabolism process. It needs butyrate and oxygen. And that creates the right environment for these anaerobic bacteria. They need a low oxygen environment. And so this proper metabolism becomes this symbiotic hippie community down there, in which they create their ideal environment, and they turn all this fermentable stuff into this beautiful series of molecules, of which butyrate is just, you know, kind of the star of the show at the moment.
Yeah. You know, I know when we talk about the small intestine, we talk about glutamine being kind of the preferred fuel source for small intestine cells. Butyrate really is food for the large intestine cells. And it's just Mother Nature's so cool, right? That they got this cool relationship between the cells and the bacteria that reside there, that they really help feed each other to make sure both stay in equilibrium and function the way they're supposed to. And certainly for people that have inflammatory bowel disease, things like Crohn's and ulcerative colitis, we use butyrate as a treatment. And I know some gastroenterologists will even give people butyrate enemas to help stop the bleeding and the inflammation. So an incredibly powerful, really nutrient that our gut needs to really thrive and survive. I know with butyrate supplements, though, there's always been a lot of issues with manufacturing And I have a colleague, unnamed, who makes a butyrate product. And I know he said when they made it, they had to bring in all these semi trucks to their warehouse to basically had air scrubbers because it smells so horrible that even the employees who work there like couldn't stand it. So I know the product you make, it's called Tributrin. It's a little bit different. Can you tell us like why yours is different?
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the reasons is what you just mentioned. I too struggled. I mean, butyrate, as I think Eastern and Western doctors and integrative doctors have been aware of butyrate for a number of decades, and it's very well studied, but it is very sensitive molecule and it's very smelly. It kind of smells like a deep vomit. And like you said, the majority of humans cannot stand it. And so the easiest thing to do in chemistry is to bond something with a salt. And so the initial versions of butyrate, the most well-studied versions of butyrate supplements are called sodium butyrate. And so it's right. Bonding butyric acid with sodium. There's drawbacks to the, obviously with the breakthrough technology, there's always going to be advancements. Just like we went from flip phones to iPhones. There's new versions of butyric acid now, and it's called tributrin. And finally, we figured out manufacturing technology to be able to keep the molecule safe, to encapsulate it, to work with it. And really what it is in the first version, we had sodium bonded with butyric acid. In this next version, we have fat bonded with three butyric acid molecules. And so what this gives us is we don't have that sodium molecule. And sodium, as we all know, is necessary for human health. Without enough of it, you literally do die. But with too much of it, you will potentially die as well. And if you wanted to cause a cleansing effect, I don't recommend this. Please don't do this. But you could take a bunch of salt and you will kill things inside of your gut because it does have a toxicity or a tolerance that it will do things to parts of your gut and part of your cells. You avoid that with the tributrin molecules. And then you also get a bit of a time-released effect where because it has the fat backbone, it needs a little lipase. And so what that means is it'll just travel further along the gut before it's actually liberated and able to be used and absorbed and things like this. And so really the way I talk about it is like sodium butyrate is a really cool compound, amazing thing. And it's like the first cell phones. And now we have the next generation of sort of iPhone technology. And it just allows us to do different things we were never able to do with the first generation.
Yeah, you know, that's going to be my question. You know, when we're trying to deliver something to the large intestine, you know, how do we create in a way that can get through the acid of the stomach, get through the 12 to 15 feet of small intestine, and then be bioavailable by the time it gets to the large intestine?
Well, you got to do it with layers of defense. You got to plan for it way ahead of time. And so the first step is to choose the right molecule. And so in this case, I tried sodium butyrate personally. I tried it consulting and it kind of helped, but it never really lived up to the promises I was hoping for. Yeah. Even though I fit the profile of needing butyrate myself. And so this breakthrough with tributrin, I wasn't expecting a lot. I was like, okay, well, you know, we've tried this before. It's, you know, not going to be there. But with the addition of a enteric capsule technology, it totally changed the game for me and my gut, as well as the people that, you know, we've been working with since then. And so the difference between, say, a vegetarian capsule or a gelatin capsule, as soon as you swallow it, it's got about 5 to 7 minutes in stomach acid before it opens up, right? It starts to disintegrate and open up. Then you have a next generation of capsule technology that's called delayed release. Now, most delayed release companies will give you a certification of 30 to 45 minutes, meaning their capsule technology will survive 30 to 45 minutes of stomach acid before it opens up. If you know anything about like digestion, you know that the food's going to be in your stomach usually a minimum of 2 hours, somewhere at least around there. And so what are we really getting? Well, we're getting with the delayed release capsule, we are getting some benefit, but not a ton of benefit. Most of that active ingredient is going to be exposed and attacked by the acid. With true enteric capsules, it's a different technology. It's you're again, literally like an iPhone 5 to an iPhone 15. With the iPhone 5, if you expose it to water, you were freaking out. You were like, oh no, there goes $1,000. The iPhone 15, they're like, hey, take this in the water. Just don't go below like 100 meters in the water. It'll be okay. And that's what enteric capsules are. So ours does not open until the pH of 7. And so if you have a pH of 7 in your stomach, we got other things to address. That's definitely the wrong direction. Right. We've gone in the wrong direction here. But with the mixing of bicarbonate in the top of the small intestine, at some point, like in the top third of the small intestine, that pH window of 7 to 9, which is where the capsule opens, that should happen. And so the capsule then disintegrates, and then you have that also that lipase factor that it's going to take a little bit longer, so it's going to penetrate deeper. So that's how the product is sort of different than anything else out there, and why I do think there's differential effects versus other butyrate supplements.
So who is the ideal target patient for this product?
So I think anybody who is struggling with any sort of leaky gut symptoms or any sort of gut related symptoms that have not been properly eradicated or properly figured out, despite everything that we have, like we have probiotics, we have prebiotics, we have restrictive diets and you know, elimination diets, things like this, all these things. The problem with all those issues is that at the end of the day, that hippie community down there, it needs the fermentable matter. So if you go low FODMAP, if you go SCD, if you go GAPS, if you go all these diets, you're actually reducing your butyrate, like your butyrate potential, and then your butyrate production. And then we talked right at the beginning that if you lose your butyrate production, you lose the preferred fuel source for those large intestine cells. Then you start to increase oxygen in the large intestine, and you literally create the like a Mars environment for the good bugs. Like you are, it's not like an option. Like it doesn't matter how many probiotics you take, they cannot grow, they cannot exist without the right oxygen gradient. And so you are potentially creating this situation where I think a lot of people get stuck, which is why I was saying anybody who has like leaky gut related things or kind of stuck gut stuff that hasn't really recovered yet, where you need the butyrate, but you can't get the butyrate because all that fermentable stuff keeps causing bloating or it keeps causing some sort of food reactions. And so taking something like Tributernex, we've found to be very beneficial for that population of people who is hypersensitive, just does not seem to really make the full recovery we're helping them to make. And then it's also really helpful for folks who are too loose. So the diarrhea dominant folks.
Is there anybody that shouldn't take it? Is there any medical contraindication where this might be a bad thing for somebody?
No, there's technically no medical contraindication in real life. I would say that if you're someone who uses enemas on a daily basis to go to the bathroom, like you're super constipated, that you need to be very careful with the introduction of it, and you need to plan for more usage of your constipation band-aid supplements or however you do it. Butyrate does happen to be like a motility regulator. And so you can go search PubMed and you can find research studies on butyrate and constipation being helpful, as well as butyrate and diarrhea being helpful. The introduction we found with Tributernex to be slightly slower and a slightly more hard if you're one of those constipated folks. You might need more magnesium or vitamin C or whatever you use on a regular basis in order to get over the hump. And if everything goes to plan, hopefully we'll be able to run some research studies to try to figure this out. But I have a theory that those people who are constipated have less butyrate being made on a regular basis. And so when you introduce the butyrate, it's such a change in what they're normally used to that it kind of causes the system to freak out and sort of lock down even more. And it takes a while. We do see actually a lot of people in the weeks like 8 to 12, where they have this sort of spontaneous experience where they write into our help desk or they call us and they're like, oh my gosh, I'm suddenly having spontaneous bowel movements. I haven't had this in 10 years. This is amazing. And it just took a long time for them to get to one or two or three pills per day.
Yeah. And that's been my clinical experience. I mean, I've seen people with, you know, long-term constipation and diarrhea. You know, it just seems to kind of balance it out. So if you're on the loose side, it kind of helps firm things up, you're reducing inflammation. But if you're on the constipated side, again, I'm not sure what the mechanism is, but it does seem to help have people have more regular bowel movements in conjunction with everything else you're talking about, making sure they're getting plenty of fiber, prebiotics, balancing your gut ecology, eating good food. But again, my clinical experience has been it helps most people. And again, I can't say I've ever seen anyone that had a bad reaction to butyrate.
The only folks are the mast cell activation folks, but if you cannot tolerate any other supplements, please don't try Cherrybeater next. It's not going to be any different than what you're already experiencing. You need to, you know, focus on your nervous system. But yeah, like, but and that should be no, it should be like a no duh experience for us, right? It's right. Because we talked about the fact that it's like a nutrient. It's like a vitamin D3 or a magnesium or something. Like, we literally need this nutrient, and without this nutrient, a lot of processes are going to suffer, if not work at all.
I want to talk a little bit about probiotics. You know, there are literally thousands and thousands of studies, lots of different strains. And again, I think, you know, we're just touching the tip of the iceberg and really understanding our gut microbiome. It's incredibly complex, you know, thousands of organisms, trillions of actual, you know, cells between bacteria, viruses, parasites, and so forth. But I know you've got kind of a unique blend of very specific probiotics and beta glucans called Holoimmune. Can you tell us a little bit about why you selected these specific strains together?
Yeah. So sometimes I get typified as like anti-probiotics. I'm not anti-probiotics. I'm just anti most companies, building of their probiotic products.
Yeah.
The pandemic kicked off, at the time my fiance, she wasn't my fiance, she was a girlfriend at the time, was diagnosed with breast cancer. My mom has a lot of autoimmune issues, and I have anxiety. So you mix that all together, I'm February, March, I'm just kind of, I can't sleep. I'm just in PubMed. I'm trying to figure out, how are we going to handle this thing? And what could I do from a gut immune experience to do more than just provide raw ingredients? And by that, I mean like vitamin A and vitamin D3 and zinc and all these like raw building nutrients, which are totally important, but how could we do more? And that's where I ran across these dead probiotics, these probiotic strains that they were killing, mostly in Japan is where most of this research comes out of. They were preferentially killing a group of probiotics, and then they were giving the live bugs and the dead bugs to different cohorts of humans, and they were seeing differential effects, meaning the live bugs would show benefit and the dead bugs would show benefit, but not the same benefit. And that was like really interesting. Number one, because everybody at the time, and kind of everybody still, is saying that your probiotics need to be alive to do something, which is absolutely not true. That's not what the research shows. But number two, the fact that if I had to categorize, I can't say that I've read every paraprobiotic or heat killed probiotic research study that's ever been published, but I swear I've read at least 95%. And if I had to characterize that literature, what I would say is that they really focus on modulating the immune system. They're not really good at like resetting the microbiome. They're not really good at constipation or diarrhea or muscle mass or a lot of things that live bugs are good at. They are really good at modifying the immune system. And so as I started to read through this, and I started to realize with the cytokine storms that were hitting some folks during that time period, I was like, oh, you could actually die if your immune system responds with a sledgehammer instead of responding with a regular hammer. Like this is actually an interesting thing where we need the immune system to respond with the appropriate use of force for the situation. If you just respond super hard to everything, like really bad things could happen. And so I started looking at the research, and it was amazing that these dead bugs were basically modifying pathways on the TH1 side, on the TH2 side. They were allowing the immune system to talk better to itself. They were improving things that were classified as like autoimmune type issues. They were improving things that were like not autoimmune, like hay fever, things like this. And I was like, this is really cool data. Let me go get the products and like try them on myself, which is how I normally do this. I couldn't get them. There wasn't a lot on the market. And so I was like, okay, well, how do I get access to these cool products? I had to make a product. And so
that's one way around it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, I want to play with these and I can't get access. And it also does happen that I was, you know, very worried about my soon to be wife. And, you know, it turns out she has been using Claritin on and off the majority of her life. And so at the back of my mind, I was like, you know, hopefully this is going to help us fight viruses. But if it doesn't, I bet based on all this human data, it's going to help with hay fever and sort of seasonal allergies. And at least we'll have that, you know, it won't be for naught. I'll make a product that hopefully my mom could take and my soon to be wife could take for allergy season. So I build the product, and sure enough, like it's totally different than what I expected, kind of like Tributarnex. It ends up working really well for anybody who has what I would say an out of balance immune system. And so that ends up applying to a large swath of people, from those people with hay fever to those people with like eczema and sort of like inflammatory response type disease processes. And I think one of the things I realized in this whole couple year journey here is that I made the assumption, I think a lot of people are making the assumption, that if you deal with your root causes, meaning you handle an infection in your gut, or you get rid of your mold, or you balance your nervous system, whatever, that like somehow your immune system just naturally snaps back into balance, into perfect use cases. And I think we forgot that there might need to be a rehab period, or we might need to retrain the immune system what that is. It might not remember how to act. And so that's what I really feel like these dead bugs are actually doing. They're rehabbing the immune system's mechanisms and the way it handles everyday life.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think for so long, we thought that colonization was really the driving force behind taking probiotics. And like you said, we've kind of learned that really is a very, very small percentage of what's going on. They're really transient signaling molecules to the other bugs there. And again, this ability to modulate the immune system is super huge. It's funny, I actually just came back from an autism think tank in Chicago this last weekend, and I was with several pediatric gastroenterologists at Mass General, which is, you know, a very famous hospital in Boston. And one of the head guys there was talking very much about that. And I think people kind of got offended, were upset that he's saying, hey, look, these don't do what you think they do. And they're like, what do you mean? You know, this is what we thought and this is what we learned. He's like, yeah, but not really, you know. And to your point, you know, do they really have to be alive? If they maintain the antigenic component, that's going to be true whether they're dead or alive. And that may be all our immune system really needs, again, to have this immune modulating behavior. And if that's the case, like you said, it's cool that we can apply it to so many different things, not just gastrointestinal issues, but autoimmune issues. Again, you can look at any autoimmune disease. I mean, personally, I have MS. And again, there's tons of research on how the microbiome changes in MS specifically. And again, if we can change the gut, you know, we can potentially change the brain. So that gives us this opportunity to apply it to so many different chronic conditions and helping balance the immune system.
Yeah, it's really going to be exciting over the next 10 years where the dead probiotic research is going to travel and where it's going to go. But you're hitting on it, which is that it's going to take a while for people to wrap their heads around that you're ingesting almost like another piece of dirt or something, but you're ingesting a molecule that ends up causing a signal that, in this case, maybe it's making more T regulatory cells. And we can actually see this. We know this data is real. We did it in mice. They did it in humans. They can figure out these mechanisms because they're so immune specific. And that if you increase a bunch of T regulatory cells, you know, things like MS or other conditions could easily be helped in a non-specific yet specific way that holistically is helping the human just deal with everyday life in a much better way.
Well, I think if you go back in time and look at, you know, when we were mostly laborers, farmers, you know, our food wasn't as, you know, clean as it is now. We ate dirt, which means inevitably we consumed certain microbes. Some were dead, some were alive, you know, and in our effort to keep our food supply clean, you know, we irradiate food, we do all these things to it so that it's really not the food that we ate maybe 100 years ago. And it's interesting, again, I think when you look at places like Africa, where, you know, we might say their food sanitation isn't the same as the US, yet their rate of allergy, autoimmune disease, cancer even, is significantly less than someplace like the United States. So how much is having that exposure to these bugs, dead or alive, is really important in keeping our gut bugs healthy. And I think it's huge.
I can't triple down on what you said even more. I mean, if you're able to, as a person, to eat some sort of fermented, you know, even a spoonful of truly fermented food with every meal, you're going to be doing a lot more than the majority of folks in what you just said, which is just consuming a wild amount of unregulated bugs, both dead and alive. And I think the studies and the research show that that is going to be extremely helpful for you, no matter what you're dealing with, including just aging.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about dosing for both the Tributrin X and the Holoimmune?
Yeah. So with Holoimmune, every capsule is the studied dosage amount from these various companies out of Japan. And so they all ran their own clinical trials on humans. We are the first company to combine multiple versions of dead bugs into one pill. And so one is the basic starting dose with Holoimmune. A lot of people, especially those who have the typical hay fever, you know, I'm stuck on Claritin or Zyrtec, they see the best response at around two pills. And then for the folks who are dealing with neurodegeneration, traumatic brain injury, some sort of acute related thing, 3 to 4 per day seems like a pretty cool intervention that can, you can do that for a couple months. There's, at this point in time, I'm not aware of any data that suggests you need to like lower it at some point, but what our customers say is that they go up to a higher dose and they lower over time. I've done 10 to 12 per day for like extended periods of time, just to see if I grew a third eye or anything, just to make sure I'm not going to harm anybody. Nothing happened. And I still got the flu, so it doesn't prevent anything, for the record. And then Tributrin X is kind of similar. We ask you that if you are on the constipation side, go slow, go one pill every 3 days or so. If you're wondering about timing, food or not food, doesn't really matter. But if you're only doing one per day, there's studies on non-deep sleep. So the deep sleep stuff, non-REM deep sleep, sorry. And so a lot of people, if they take it before bed or with dinner, they can, if they have an Oura ring or a tracker of some type, they can actually see like sometimes a 10 to 30% bump in their non-REM deep sleep, which is pretty cool. And then from there, you graduate up to whatever you're dealing with. So if you're loose stools, you're trying to get to a point where your stools are normalized. But the majority of the data that we're getting from our clinics that are using the product is somewhere between 3 to 6 per day is the intervention dose, where people report like very happy results, and as well as test numbers actually move into the green zones and people are pretty stoked about what's happening.
Well, I know people who are tuning in are going to be interested in trying it. So we're going to drop a link for both these products in the show notes. I highly recommend, if you've been struggling with long-term gastrointestinal issues, autoimmune issues, all these sort of, you know, chronic lingering things, you know, fixing your gut makes such a huge difference. So I strongly encourage people, you know, try it out. You know, there's no harm in trying it. Again, these are things that are well-researched, high evidence of science behind it. So again, this isn't some willy-nilly thing that, you know, you just came up out of the blue. So I'm always interested in things that have good science behind it. And both these products, again, have great research behind it. And I'm going to try it myself. So I'll be really curious to see how I feel as well.
All right. Maybe we'll have to do a round two when after you give it a shot.
Well, Stephen, I really appreciate you spending time with us on the podcast today. And I said, we'll drop everything in the show notes. And, you know, thank you again for putting the time, energy, and effort into creating these products, because again, I know they're going to help so many people.
Well, thank you so much.